birth to our son. But we all knew President Nixon was in a hurry to get out of Vietnam, and our division had a target date to be out of Vietnam by the 1st of April. We'd already been turning in equipment. I'd given up my pistol. So I was out in the jungle on patrol with a rifle and no pistol. And honestly, I missed my wife and I couldn't wait to see the baby. But then again, the Army was our family. One of my teachers, speaking of the Army, once told me, said, when you go to Vietnam, he said, you'll never get everything you deserve, but make sure you deserve what you get. I started in the Army as a 17-year-old plebe at West Point in 1962, fresh out of high school. I learned squad tactics and bayonet drill that summer, and along with the rest of the class, took the usual harassment. 4 years later, I graduated as valedictorian of the class. I'd won a Rhodes Scholarship. I was commissioned as a lieutenant. I studied at Oxford University. I went through Airborne and Ranger School. Rangers, you know, are the elite airborne light infantry. But I hadn't proven myself in battle yet. When I got to Vietnam, I initially worked at the Division Operations Center of the Army's 1st Infantry Division, the Big Red One, and then as a company commander of a mechanized infantry company. Later, I would teach at West Point, command a battalion, a brigade, a division. I'd help develop the Army's field training systems at the National Training Center, design U.S. military strategy, and help shape how we'd fight in the future. I'd work with U.S. Ambassador Richard Holbrooke to help negotiate the Dayton Peace Accords that ended the conflict in Bosnia in 1995. As NATO's Supreme Allied Commander in Kosovo in 1999, I'd command Allied forces in the first major military action ever undertaken by the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. As NATO's Supreme Allied Commander, I was the 12th in a line that began with General Dwight Eisenhower in 1951. For the past few years, I've been in banking, consulting, commentary, teaching. I even took a shot at high political office. But I most loved the Army and service to country. So I think I know something about war, about battles and strategy and cool logic and hot and cold emotions that lie within our hearts. I also know a little about politics now and the pursuit of money that animates much of public life. In each of these theaters, war and life, I've learned some lessons, and I want to share these lessons with you. I'd like to emphasize not only the fighting, that is the battles, tactics, weaponry, and terrain that you normally think about in conjunction with military history, but also what lies behind war. Patterns emerge, and they have to be understood. We'll start with the French and Indian War from 1754 to 1763. That was part of a larger confrontation between France and Great Britain over their colonial aims and empires in North America. Strategy and tactics on the ground in the Upper Ohio River Valley provided the foundation for the American military, from the formation of a militia system to the emergence of George Washington and other early American military and political leaders. We'll also revisit the American Revolutionary War, which the Americans won by not losing. We'll talk about the Battle of New Orleans in 1815, the Civil War, the Spanish-American War, World War I, World War II, the Korean War, the Cold War, Vietnam, Panama, the First Gulf War. We'll go on to war in the Balkans, Afghanistan, Iraq, and the future of warfare. England's earliest attempt to form a colony in North America was off the coast of North Carolina in 1585. It failed. A few years later, the Jamestown Company came ashore in 1607, just upriver from present-day Norfolk, Virginia. Funded as a limited liability company with the intent of duplicating the Spaniards' seizure of gold, the settlers found no gold, and they barely survived. Then in 1620, Plymouth Colony was founded on the western side of Cape Cod Bay, present-day Massachusetts. Here, the native population actually brokered the land and taught the art of survival to the European settlers. New crops made an impact in the old world as well as the new. There was tobacco and indigo, corn and potatoes, and in time, trade with Europe and the Caribbean made New England shippers and merchants and British planters.